Welcome to Just Ask, the podcast of the Hive Collective, a digital health platform built to empower women to make educated and informed decisions about their health. I'm your co-host, Dr. Heather Quayle, a leading women's and gender-related nurse practitioner. We provide answers to the questions you may not know how to ask by interviewing experts in nursing, medicine, sexual health, and wellness. We started in 2020 with myself and colleague Dr. Tara Thompson, pharmacist, and now welcome our co-host and leading women's health expert and nurse practitioner, Jackie Piasta. This is a safe space where no question is off limits, and we advocate and encourage listeners to just ask their most intimate questions and to break down the barriers of embarrassment and taboo.
I'm Jackie Piasta, your other co-host and fellow Queen Bee of the Hive. Each month, we bring on a new guest that is an expert and healthcare innovator in their respective field. As the healthcare landscape rapidly evolves, we are excited to be on the cutting edge and have decided to evolve the podcast into the Hive Collective, a space that seeks to equip you to better navigate your health journey. To learn more about our new and exciting platform, check out our mission, vision, values, and initiatives as we discuss our rebrand in Season 4, Episode 1. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're excited you're here and hope you enjoy our show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Just Ask podcast. This is your host, Jackie Piasta, Women's Health NP, Menopause Specialist, coming in with my fellow Queen Bee, Dr. Heather Quayle, also Women's Health Nurse Practitioner. We are so excited to talk today on two great articles that just hit the press, one on weight loss results in menopause with women on hormone therapy and utilizing these new hot drugs, GLP-1s, or also named semaglutide. A lot of people know them as Ozempic or Wegovy. And then a second one on testosterone therapy in women and looking at whether or not there's an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and breast cancer. So we are really looking forward to diving into these articles with you guys today.
Yes. So let's talk about this hormone therapy and the boost that it does for women's weight loss. I mean, Jackie and I have known this for a while, but to actually see the evidence behind it, I think as providers, that just makes us all the more happy that we're like, okay, we knew this, we needed the evidence, and it just really kind of guides our clinical practice.
Yeah, it is. It is really exciting. You know, we've already known there's been studies that have linked hormone therapy use as opposed to not hormone therapy use has been shown to really attenuate that increase in total and visceral abdominal fat. So visceral fat is that fat that lines your internal organs. This is more closely associated with cardiovascular risk, and so it really can limit that amount, and even sometimes quoted up to 60% of helping that. And then also women on hormone therapy tend to do better at maintaining their BMI. And we saw that in the KEEPS trial. That was a study in 2005, which looked at actually early estrogen on cardiometabolic risk factors and saw that. So this was really nice. I agree with you, Heather, to actually have a study designed for this sole purpose of looking at these parameters.
Absolutely. So what it really showed is that, it looked at postmenopausal women, but I see it in my perimenopausal, that when these women were on hormone therapy, they had a higher total body weight loss with the semaglutide for up to 12 months versus the patients with no hormone therapy. And then, like Jackie said, those cardiometabolic risk markers were improved with and without the use of hormone therapy. So that was a good thing that we saw. But statistically, we also see when women are going through this perimenopausal time, and especially after the final menstrual period within that year, is their cholesterol numbers start going up. We have a little bit of data on it, but again, I'm seeing it quite a bit in my practice. I know Jackie and I have talked on this multiple times, like together about it. So I know she's seeing it too. So knowing where these GLP-1s really fall, I think is a really positive thing. And also we're coming off the Oprah special with that too, and her talking a lot about it and really kind of making a dive on saying like, it's not about eat less, work out more, all those things. And we really need to change the trajectory, especially when we start having these findings behind us.
Yeah, no, that was exciting. Oprah did that special. And if you weren't able to tune into it, I believe you can stream it on Hulu. But it was a very well done special. You know, it's interesting too, when we think about these drugs, these GLP-1s, what they do is they mimic a hormone naturally produced in your gut that helps with your digestion and helps with your insulin response and helps with your hunger and also your satiety. But one of the sort of negative things that these drugs do, and where they've gotten a little bit of flack, especially because they've taken the world by storm, and I feel like everybody and their mom is prescribing them now. So I think we see also a lot of not very responsible prescribing of these medications. And you can actually lose quite a bit of lean muscle mass on these medications, especially if you're being given, your dose titration is being too quick, or you're losing weight too fast. And hormone therapy actually has been shown to help negate the effects of lean muscle mass and actually help increase your lean muscle mass, not by a lot, by about 1%, but still it's better than nothing. And so I think what we will find as time goes on is that if women choose to use these GLP-1s as a tool in their weight loss journey, if they are on hormone replacement therapy, it's another tool to help maintain our body composition in the most healthy form it can be.
Absolutely.
So these, it's really important to note, these are just tools. It doesn't mean if you can't take hormone replacement therapy, you are failing, or if you can't take semaglutide for insurance doesn't cover it, or you don't do well on it for side effects, doesn't mean that you aren't going to be successful. These are just simply tools. And it's really nice to see these positive results.
Absolutely. And I use a body composition scale in my office. I mean, I have the big bougie one. There are other ones that patients can get. But where that's been super interesting is my scale tells me what the patient's visceral fat looks like. We try to keep it under 10. It's amazing, as we start getting into these postmenopausal years, that visceral fat, like Jackie talks about, just starts creeping up and it makes us more at risk. It also shows us the skeletal muscle mass. And like Jackie had just mentioned, we start developing this sarcopenia that starts to happen. And so I'm a stickler. Like, I'm really big when I do these drugs. I don't just hand them out like a med spa. Sorry. There are some really wonderful med spas that do this justice, but there are others that are not doing justice on this. And what it comes down to is that I want blood on my patients. I want a body composition scale. I want to know all the things. So when you are deciding to go on these drugs, we should be looking at it from a whole metabolic standpoint. I will not increase meds if I'm seeing patients lose their skeletal muscle mass, because it just does, it puts you at a lot of risk.
I very much agree. I tease my patients and tell them, I'm like, I want you to actually be mad at me that you're losing weight in a almost like too slow of a fashion for you, because our brains instantly go to, we want to lose. And I'm like, I do not care if you're annoyed at me. Like, I want you to be annoyed at me, because this is a long game. This is not a short game. This is about, you know, getting the weight off, but maintaining that muscle mass and leaving you off better than I found you. Not, you know, that, what's the slang word? Like skinny fat. We don't want people getting skinny fat. And we have to keep you out of the nursing home. We have to keep you from breaking a hip. We have to keep you from all these things. And really, truly, the hack of longevity is muscle mass. That is what's going to keep us on the, you know, going for as long as possible. It, you know, it's important to note too, this study was relatively small. It only looked at 16 women on hormone replacement therapy. I believe there were quite a bit more, 70, 80, 90. Do you know, Heather, how many women were not on hormone therapy?
She looked at like a retrospective cohort. I was just about to say, from like 106 postmenopausal women, and looked at them at 2, 6, 9, and 12 months. We'll make sure to link this to our podcast as well, too. But with those primary outcomes, you're correct. 16 overall, 16 postmenopausal women were on hormone therapy.
And 90 not. And I just found it. It's 90 not on hormone therapy. So it's still a very, it's a small sample size, as we would say, but it's not insignificant. I mean, it really isn't. And I think, you know, Heather, you already touched on it a minute, but it is really important to know that both groups did experience improvements in their cardiometabolic markers. And those are the markers that they were looking at were their glucose levels, so their blood sugar, their blood pressure, and their lipids or their cholesterol levels. And so that's really exciting as well, because those are all things that we don't want going in the wrong direction as we age.
And then the other thing that they saw, just to break it down, because we're numbers people, is the percentage of the postmenopausal women using semaglutide who lost greater than that 10% of body weight at 12 months. The numbers were 58.1% for those not using hormone therapy versus 77.4% of those that were using hormone therapy. So again, statistically significance there. And it was a combination, because we know you'll probably ask us in our messaging what type of hormone therapy. To answer that, it was 50% were on a transdermal form of estradiol, either 0.25 milligrams per day up to 0.1. And the other 50% were on a daily oral of 0.5 milligrams to 0.1 milligrams. So again, all different forms in our toolbox there. And I think that's also really important when we talk a lot around that shared decision. It doesn't have to be a one size fits all. My patients are never going to get the same thing. Jackie's aren't either. We'll do a combination of gels, patches, orals, all the different things pending patients and the shared decision process.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think these drugs are amazing. I think we're only getting started. I mean, they've been around since 2005, but they have only been FDA approved for weight loss since 2019. They really are relatively new. I mean, we're going on, you know, 5 years having them for weight loss. So we still have a big hill to climb in terms of insurance coverage with these medications, and really recognizing obesity as a chronic disease and not, you know, not just a faction of our willpower, you know, limitations, and just really, you know, allowing women and everyone in general just to kind of release some of that stigma and just whatever works for you, whatever tools you need to get to a healthier you, they're here, and it's like a menu. You can choose from it, and live your best life, really, I guess to say.
100%. The other thing I want to point out too, because we didn't mention it, is that after 12 months of use, and that's also most of my patients are on that 9 to 12 months of use, they also had improvements in their hemoglobin A1C. So that marker that shows risk of diabetes over a 3-month trajectory of your blood sugar. So that again also was a really, really positive result that we saw from the study.
Yeah. That's awesome. I see this so much in my practice. Is I'll draw women's A1Cs and they'll be right on that cusp. They'll be 5.7, which is right at that cutoff point where it goes from a normal range to pre-diabetic range. And they, you know, they'll be shocked, like, oh my gosh, it's never been that high. It's not, you know, and it really is. It's just the menopause transition, the hormone changes. And that's a huge thing that is really important to get under control.
The other thing I want to point out too, and Jackie can talk way more about it because she's done them more than I have, but anecdotally, I actually had a patient that had a normal cholesterol level, maybe a little bit of peaking on her LDL. And I said, you know what, we may want to do a particle test on you. And when we dove into the particle test to do a blood test on it, and Jackie can talk a little bit more on this, her numbers were awful. Ended up taking her to do a calcium channel score. She was okay on that, but it's like, we have these normal cholesterol levels and no one's kind of diving deeper with these women. So again, it really comes out to that shared decision-making and finding these providers. Tell our listeners kind of what that LDL particle test looks like, because I've kind of learned that from you, and I'm just astounded on some of these results I'm seeing.
Yeah. So just basically, and I forget who I heard this analogy from, but I cannot take credit for it. But I actually had a patient quote this from one of her other providers. So we have two different forms of of cholesterol. We have their high density lipoproteins known as HDL, oftentimes said slang wise as being our good cholesterol.
And then I call them the happy. That's right. The way I remember it. Happy cholesterol.
Happy cholesterol. Yeah. And then we have our LDL, which is our low density lipoproteins, otherwise known as our bad cholesterol or LDL. And I, the analogy that I used was you want your cholesterol particles to be big and bouncy and not small and sticky. And HDL are big and bouncy, and they also collect up your small and sticky ones. The more that we have these small and sticky particle sizes, the more likely they are to actually clog up our pipes or our arteries and create a cardiovascular issue down the road. So particle size, our lipid panel, what you would typically do at your regular providers, you know, primary care office, your yearly screen would just be a standard lipid panel, which looks at your total cholesterol, your HDL, your LDL, and your triglycerides. Well, we have much more sophisticated cholesterol panels now. They're called the Cardio IQ is the one I use through Quest. The Cleveland Heart Lab has their own. And there are actually more and more healthcare professionals that are getting these more sophisticated lipid panels, which look at your particle size, meaning, okay, so you have this amount of your HDL, you have this amount of your LDL, and what is actually the breakdown within that? What are the weights of these? How many big and bouncy ones do you have? How many small and sticky ones do you have? And what is actually your risk going to be? And then it actually looks too at these carrier proteins, the lipoprotein A and the B, and those actually factor in too with your risk going forward. And I would love, Heather, is another idea to have a cardiologist on here to talk more about it, because it is really important. And I think this is where we're going to see more just preventative medicine go towards these more sophisticated lipid panels.
I agree. And I think that's maybe how we get some coverage for these drugs, is where my head has been thinking. And I am 100% on board with you on this. I think I didn't even know these tests existed much long ago until Jackie kind of was telling me about it. But I'll also let you know, like she mentioned Quest Cardiac IQ. I've been talking a ton to my rep over the last several months about this. These tests are covered by most people's insurance now, which is fabulous. And if it's not here for us in Georgia, it's like a $40 out-of-pocket test, which is amazing in patients. And so I think, it comes down to that precision medicine.
I'll code mine like screening for lipid disorders and then also like a family history of high cholesterol or family history of high blood pressure or something there to see if you can't, you know, get the insurance to lock into it more. But on that same line of the cardiovascular risk and everything, maybe we should move over to our testosterone.
Actually, I'm going to do it as a separate podcast. So we're going to sign off. We're going to do a different one.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to sign off and then we're going to jump back on so we can make these as two podcasts, because I think it'll just be easier bite-sized listening for you all.
Okay. All right. Well, awesome. Well, what other final takeaways do we want to do before we wrap up on this article here, Heather? Do we have anything else?
I think we hit all the major things on here. I think this is great. We will make sure to attach the article here. This one will be the one on the weight loss and semaglutide use with hormone replacement therapy. We'll link it in our articles, and then we'll tell you how to find us and all the things. So we're going to say bye, and then Jackie and I will jump on into another one so that you guys can take these in smaller bite-sized pieces.
Awesome. All right. Thank you guys all so much for listening and joining us on the Just Ask podcast. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Just Ask podcast. And thank you for our amazing panelists today and every day. Feel free to contact us publicly or privately with your questions and thoughts. We do not provide medical advice, but we can point you in the right direction and provide resources. You can learn more about the topics we've discussed in this episode by viewing the show notes for this podcast and following us at Just Ask ATL on Facebook and Instagram. Our podcast is available on all of your favorite platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, Google, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. Please make sure you subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. If you found value in this discussion, please share this podcast with friends or leave a rating on iTunes. Thanks again for listening. We can't wait for you to join us for the next show.